Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the brilliant podcast Insane in the Fembrain. Hello everybody, welcome to the show. We're doing it again, here we are. Hope you're well, hope everything's fine for you guys. We're doing all right here, having a lovely time. Our guest this week, absolutely brilliant. It's the double act known as Flo and Joan, or as they are really known, Nicola and Rosie in real life. Flo and Joan have a brand new show, Sweet Release, touring the UK now. And so for dates and tickets, if you visit floandjoan.com, and all the information will be on there. But do hurry, because it is selling out. So yeah, they're absolutely smashing it. We were lucky enough to catch up with them. I tell you what, I've worked with them before. I've known about them, you know, over the last few years, and to see their rise is just been—it's such a good thing to see. They're absolutely first class, brilliant, brilliant people. And it was really nice to get a chance to sit down and actually sort of get to know them a bit more, because I don't know much about them personally. So it was really cool, and they were so open and lovely, talking about, you know, growing up in Portsmouth. And you'll hear me fumble that bloody thing. I'll wait until you hear it. Honestly, sometimes you know, you think you know a thing, turns out you don't know anything. You'll hear it in the episode anyway, when I clumsily launch into that, which I do quite often. I do that in real life, actually. I kind of think I know something, or I know about stuff, and then I'll go off on a tangent, and then it turns out I know nothing about what I'm saying. I think lots of people do that, though. I'm always fascinated with people that can quote things and know stuff from books and films and things, and I'm like, oh, I don't really have that kind of brain. My brain's just this tombola continually tipping over with all different thoughts and weirdness. But anyway, coming up in a minute is Flo and Joan.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
A podcast from producer paul.co.uk.
We're Flo and Joan.
We are sisters. One of the questions that we get asked the most is, are you really real sisters? And lots of people will say, because you don't look the same, are you sure you're real sisters? So we've written them a song. Yes.
Leaking out of your headphones.
Yeah, I'll turn me down. I'll turn me down.
Not leaking out of mine. I've got a talkback button, so.
Yeah, it'll be all right.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, sorry about that, everyone.
No, that's all right. Let us know if it gets too much, and we can sort it out because we can edit all this.
Cool.
It's all
no,
fun.
Keep this in. This is good.
Oh yeah, it is. It keeps it real.
We sound like two women who can't turn on a computer and have the most sensitive ears in the world, and it does make us feel quite precious, and it's not a vibe that I want to like put into the world.
Yeah, playing up to the stereotypes, the terrible stereotypes.
Yeah. No, I just really need to protect my ears right now because then we're about to go on tour.
And we're just two middle-aged men just going, I don't really know how it works.
I think the problem is you.
Yeah. It's got to be the birds, isn't it? It's got to be the birds.
That's an engineer's favourite. It's all right leaving us. Our end's fine.
Sorry.
We're going to be fine. All right. Okay. This is fine. This is going to be fine. What were we talking about? So we were talking about the restrictions, and you were talking about your tour.
Oh, yeah. We were like, oh, it'll be fine. We got a bunch of dates, and then we realised that we're doing Wales and Scotland, and they've got different restrictions. So then every now and again, you're like, should we check in with Wales and see where they're at? We think they're all right. And our Scotland ones are in May, so I feel like it's going to be all right, hopefully. But yeah, until someone says otherwise, I'm just going to, But it does feel like everyone's forgotten the pandemic a little bit.
A little bit. And it's a bit, it worries me a little bit, but you kind of go, well, I can't, there's not much I can do about it.
Yeah.
But it's funny, isn't it? We're talking about Scotland and Wales and Ireland, you forget, because we're part of the UK, you forget that they're actually different countries, so they have different, like you say, different rules and things.
Yeah. You forget that they're slightly better at handling a pandemic than England is.
I mean, yeah, when you've got a human jelly as a prime minister.
That's very nice.
I think it's too early for CBOM. But how have you both found it? Have you? Because I know, speaking as a comedian myself, you kind of, there was a moment where when it all went away, you were like, oh, is that it now? How did you two find it?
Initially, we were like in the middle of a tour, which now feels like, it feels weird saying that given that we're literally about to start a new one. And that one was 2 years ago now. But so we were in the middle of one, and we were seeing each other every day and had been since like August or July or something. Like, it was relentless in a fun way, but we were like, no two humans should see each other this much. Little did we know. but like, so when it first happened, it felt like it came out of nowhere. I don't know if I was just like, it just felt like it came out of nowhere, where it went from, we were like 1 week out from going to Melbourne to do the Melbourne Comedy Festival and got a text being like, it's been cancelled because of coronavirus. And we were like, oh, I guess it's a thing. And so that was like the first thing to fall. And when we all thought it was going to be like 2 or 3 weeks, so we were like, this is great. We get like a break. We don't have to see each other. This is really nice. And then you're like, oh, shit.
And the weather was really good as well.
Yeah.
Like, really nice and sunny. So we were like, oh, this is a bit of a forced holiday. Because no one had quite worked out the pandemic or like how much of a normal cold it was or like what effect it was having.
Yeah.
So we were like, oh, just sun a little bit in the garden, have a little bit of time off. Because we were desperate for time off. And then you start to see like people putting their stuff online and you're like, oh, shit. Do we have to do that as well? Do I have to stare down the barrel of a camera and try and be funny and... Then Zoom gigs started to come in and we were like, I can't do them. We couldn't do Zoom gigs for a while when Zoom was on like its like trial run at the beginning of COVID. The sound delay was terrible. So we were playing like music. Nicola was in a different location.
Of course,
we were just trying to get the piano to come through with the singing at the same time. And it was a bloody car crash. So we had to wait for Zoom to get shit together before we could do anything.
Well, it was kind of, Zoom kind of, like the pressure was on Zoom immediately because we'd never had a Zoom before.
No.
And then suddenly it was like, by the way, you've got to sort this shit out. And Zoom's like, why, really, me? Yeah, you've got to get your shit together right now.
The world is on your shoulders.
Yeah, basically.
We were like sending huge, like we did like one or two videos for like different things, and we're sending like huge video and sound files backwards and forwards to each other on WeTransfer, thinking like this cannot be the most efficient way to do this. But at the time, like that's all we knew how, like we figured it out now, but like at the time we were like, okay, so download this Logic file, you wipe out your computer with that, then put your vocal on it, then you send it back to me, I'll send you a five videos of me singing it down a camera, you edit that, then send it back. And it was just
stupid.
It was dumb. It was really fucking dumb. Figured it out in the end though.
And then you do all that, and then, like, you know, then five people saw it at the beginning. Come on, man.
Then you have the existential crisis.
Yeah, that's
it. And then
it just all
builds up. It's just one brick on top of the other.
But I know what you mean about the immediacy of the kind of, like, initially we were kind of like, it's far away. This is just a news thing. It'll just pass. And I remember this because when I was with Jade at the time, and I remember she was in Newcastle or something like that, and then she just said, she was up there, she went, the gig's been pulled, I need to get back. I don't remember, like, and we worked it out, we're like, right, if you get the train now and get back to London, you'll get back to London at like, half one or whatever it was, and I'll just come and get you in London. It was a real, all of a sudden it was like, oh shit, this is like a film.
Yeah.
Like, she had to race to get the train, got the train back to London, and I met her in London, and yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With toilet rolls flying around everywhere.
Toilet rolls. toilet rolls and pasta. Which sounds like terrible.
It was like a little bit of fun though as well. Like, well, not fun because it was also quite tragic. But at the time, like the excitement of being like, what's going to happen? Like I was with my housemates and it was my birthday, I think, on the day that they announced it all, like for coffee shops and things like that to close.
Yeah, right.
Which is where it really felt like, oh, shit is real. Like the coffee shops are closing. my local deli is shutting down this
year. Oh no.
So you can take this seriously. And then we were sort of just like a little bit like huddled around the radio waiting for the Boris's announcement, like little evacuees.
It was, wasn't it? Every day we'd sit and we'd wait, and he's having his little moment, his little Churchill moment, wasn't he?
It
was almost like a slightly fetishized version of like really hard life, like wartime stuff.
Well, we're all sat around. We've just got more luxuries than we actually need.
Yeah.
And we're going, drinking. It's just like, exactly, what were you saying? Yeah, go on.
I was going to say, still drinking coffee out of a little tin can, just to like really get in the mood for it.
Oh, it's just like the war, isn't it? Then? Yeah. pass me another cream egg.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a funny old time, wasn't it? It was. And you were talking about like spending a lot of time together. And are you quite close to sisters? The only reason I ask that is because I've got a brother and a sister. We're not really that close. We love each other, but I barely see them. And you work together. That must be, do you have a good relationship?
We do. I think we do now. Mm. We never used to be, we sort of always describe it as when we were younger, we were sort of indifferent to each other because we're just both really different people. Mm. So our paths just didn't really cross. Like we just didn't, we had our own friends and that's who we like spending time with. And then I think the older we got, the more you realise like we still had things in common. We weren't like completely separate, but like you notice when you get older, the things that you sort of value and the things that, like, we enjoy sort of doing things together that my friends wouldn't enjoy doing. Mm. So then you're like, oh, yeah, I do. I like spending time with this person and we've got a lot in common and stuff. So I think that sort of built the foundations of us being like, I think we might be able to work together.
Yeah.
We didn't quite anticipate spending as much time as we do. but, yeah, I mean, if we hated each other, it wouldn't work because comedy is not worth dreading going to work every day.
No, not at all.
No double acts where they hated each other survived. Like, that's why there's no double acts. it doesn't work if you don't like each other.
Well, this is it. I mean, they talk about it in bands. I've said it myself. Some of the best bands had because they had the friction going on between the brothers, like, you know, like the Kinks and things like that. But like you say, it doesn't last very long.
No.
It's not very sustainable.
Yeah. We thought about that quite a lot because we've been given so many examples of siblings in the entertainment industry who've ended in absolute chaos. Mm. There's an unlimited amount of examples of it happening. And we're like living that at the moment in like we've been doing this for 5 or 6 years, so we're in like the glory days where it still feels fun, but we're like, what happens in 10 years time?
Yeah. That ticking clock.
When I smash a tambourine over your head, we walk off the set of Loose Women and
yeah, it's just kicking off. Yeah. separate tour buses and all that.
Yeah.
I can't wait for that. That'll be that'll be brilliant. That'll be a really exciting time. Yeah. For us,
the BBC
watching it.
Documentary.
Yeah, that's it.
People
say
they always seemed quite psychopathic in the beginning. Like, we knew it was never going to last, that they said they liked each other. And we all knew it was coming. We could all see it coming.
I can't wait. I can't wait for this to... Because I'll be... Whatever it is, well, it's not Twitter, but whatever it is by then that we're all addicted to. I can't wait to plaster this all over it. Go, see?
Yeah. All right. You break off and you call yourself Joan and Flo.
That's it. Oh yeah, start arguing at which way round it goes and on the
gets
credits.
The name.
That's it. But how, you must have been asked this 1,000 times, but for the benefit of our listeners, who might not have heard this before, how did it come about? Did it just kind of naturally happen, or was there a sort of how did Flo and Joan come to be?
It was sort of fairly naturally. Nicola went out to do comedy in Chicago and Toronto. Mm. They've got like a school there that you can go and like just try classes out and stuff. And I went and joined in Toronto. Oh, I did a bit of Chicago as well and joined in Toronto. And then neither of us had like, I didn't have a visa. Nicola had a job at a cinema.
Yeah.
But 2 shifts a week or something. So we had a lot of free time. So we just tried a few songs, I think. Our friend had a gig on and he was like, do you want to just come and do something? So we were like, oh, we'll just try it. We bought a keyboard for like 40 quid or something.
Of Craigslist.
Brilliant. We did like some rehearsing it, but we could only like fit it in late at night. So we were trying to like rehearse in our little flat, but we were in like a big apartment building. I remember this woman coming down and knocking on the door and being like, it's not fair. It's not fair on me. I'm above you and play the keyboard at that time of night. And we were like, oh, fuck, how are we going to do this? But yeah, we did a few songs at the gig and then we kept 2 of them. We did a sketch, which was absolutely terrible.
Yeah.
So our sketch, I think we were kidding ourselves to think that we could even try sketch.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's nice to say that you tried it.
You can go on the old CV at the bottom under special skills in the same way that I can technically speak French on my CV.
Yeah. And then we did a thing that made it into the special we did in 2019. The first thing we ever did made it into that special. And then a song we did in our first show. Yeah, and it just went from there. We just sort of like just carried on doing it until people stopped booking us on shows. We just thought, oh, we'll just carry on doing it. Mm. But yeah, and now here we are.
Talking to you,
the Rich Wilson.
Absolutely. It's not bad, is it? So it's my birthday tomorrow. Well, this
is it?
So this is like special. And you're the first people we've spoken to in 2022. So
oh,
there you go.
Yeah. Shit. So, I'm sorry that we're the first people.
No. We were supposed to have done this ages ago. It's just I don't know why we haven't, but here we are. But it's great to see your success. You know, I've said this before. In comedy, even when I started in 2004, it was still a bit of a boys' club. And it did take a lot. It took a lot for a woman to kind of push through all that and get where they were. Because, again, there weren't as many women doing it, but it still took a lot for them to push through. So it's good to see. It's good to see that things are changing now. Do you feel it's different now? You probably don't remember. You don't remember what it was like back then, but... What was it like now for women in this industry? Are there still issues, or have we figured it out?
Do you know what I have, just because it's on the brain, because we're writing this new show at the moment, and we've got like, we talk about women and we talk about our own experiences, and we're women. Mm. And I came away from the show the other day and I was like, I think we talk about women too much. I think we talk about being a woman too much. And then I had to come, and we had a song, and I was like, and we say something about, it's the final song, we say someone's a magical woman, we're talking about a witch, and we call her a magical woman, and I was like, can we just take out the word woman, because I just feel like we've just ratted on about women so much, and just, maybe just saying woman at the end is just one step too far for everyone. But then I was also like, your comedy has to be about your own experience, and I'm a woman, and I'm still coming away thinking, oh, am I chatting about being a woman too much? So, like, I guess that's, like, I don't know, it's probably still there in your mind that you're thinking, oh, I can't go on stage and talk about my life too much because people won't like the woman's stuff.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So I guess that pressure's still there. And we do, I do have the pressure every single time of being like, if we do bad at this gig tonight, the other women on this gig might also have a terrible time because we've proved to people that women are still shit.
Yeah. That musical comedy is terrible and women suck is like the key takeaway. Yeah. If we bomb a gig.
We have two stones on the shoulders. One is musical, not making musical comedy shit, and the other one's not making women shit.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
still
yeah,
feel
yeah,
that
yeah,
pressure, but also like we've been doing it for a while and we obviously you eat shit every now and again, but
yeah, of course.
I guess like you're just proving yourself each time that we're not coming away too, what's the word? Not coming away for the gigs too scarred. Mm. Yeah, so we've got to be doing, you know, you've got to be doing something right. And I think audiences get to see a lot more women and have access to a lot more women doing stuff. So they get used to that little annoying woman's voice in their head. That sounds like their mum.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah, there was a bit of that. I know when, if I get called Richard, I shudder.
Richard.
Yeah, Richard. I'm like, oh God, now what have I done?
The name Richard always reminds me. Did you ever watch Keeping Up Appearances?
Yes.
When she just go, Richard.
I know. I can't watch it. I got PTSD from that TV show. But it's good though. Things are, I mean, I you know, because I can't speak from, you know, your experiences, but it does seem like things are changing for the better in this industry, and it's good to see, you know, because I, you know, even back in 2004 when I started, or even when I worked up the creek in various places, and no disrespect to that, well, it just how it was, you know, they would go in, oh, you know, there's only, you couldn't have more than one woman on the bill because it would confuse the audiences. You're like, what are you talking about?
Yeah,
there are definitely people that now book us and think there's two women on the bill, and you're like, it doesn't count, it's one act.
Yeah, it's like, one act.
No.
Yeah, that's
don't try
it,
that
yeah.
one.
Yeah, we see what you're doing, you're talking.
Yeah. You do still see it a lot. It's still a lot, but I don't know. The only way that we can change it and have an effect is just to make sure that we come and smash it, and then hopefully they
also not smash it, because if men are allowed to eat shit,
yeah, true, yeah,
oh yeah, we eat shit all together. Yeah, we all eat shit all the time, but I know, it's funny what you said. I don't come away going, oh my God, I've ruined it for all men.
Yeah.
I'm like, I've fucked it and I look like a dick,
but
yeah, I don't go, oh no, I better ring up all the men and go, oh sorry lads.
Yeah, get on the old WhatsApp group. Oh guys.
You know what we need an all-male lineup just to make up for this.
Yeah.
But it's good. I mean, but I again, you know, like you're back out on tour now, you've got the Bloomsbury Theatre that you're selling out, which is incredible. You must feel relieved after everything that's gone on over the last couple of years. You must feel incredible now. To think,
yeah,
that, you know,
I think
it's all back.
A thing that everyone, I don't know, I can't speak for you, Rosie, but you always worry as well, like where we kind of, a lot of people put all of their stuff online and we kind of put dribs and drabs, and you worry that there's so many amazing people that we've all been able to discover like over lockdown online that you do. I definitely had the worry of like, what if people just like forget us? Because like, what if they just sort of run out and like we get taken over or whatever? So like you put a tour on sale and you're like, I don't even know if anyone's going to come to this. So it is like, not in like a, oh, I hope someone can't, like genuinely you're like, fuck knows if anyone's turning up to this anymore. Like we've all found so many other things that like we could be old news, like who knows? So it is nice to like, to know that we're not turning up to any venue with zero people. I can confirm that there are at least double digit tickets sold in every venue.
Just amazing. About
some amazing. Of them are double digits in like a triple digit place, but like, small percentages in a lot of places. But at least it is nice to know, like, okay, people like, and not just for us, like for everyone, like touring and gigging and everything, like it's just nice to turn up to gigs and be like, oh, there are people here, like people want to laugh and they want to like be entertained because we've all just missed it, and like they want to do it in person as well when there's so much stuff that you can just stay at home and watch. It's so nice that people are like, no, I want to go and see this person live. Is like a really nice and like exciting as well. Like, I don't know if you found the same, but like audiences just feel like so excited to be back into in rooms and stuff that you worry that your material shit and people are just like, I'll take anything right now, actually. And then in a year's time, they'll be like, that song is shit. And you're like, you were laughing at it like last year. And they're like, yeah, but we didn't have anything last year. You're like, oh,
gaslit by our audiences in a year.
Yeah.
But then the fear never leaves you, even though like any time like an extra date might be added or something. That fear never goes away of like, what if we don't sell this one? You're like constantly driven by the fear. That never goes away. You forget that you sold out the first show and you're only thinking, oh, Jesus Christ, this next show is going to be hard to sell. So, you should be able to like be driven off like being like, oh, yeah, we sold out a show. But no, that leaves you really fast. And then you're like, oh, come on, Susan, buy that ticket.
Well, I think that's what, because human beings do sort of err on the side of negativity. It goes back to our old survival instincts.
Yeah.
And I think that it's good. I think it's good to fear, have that fear rather than be sort of, I don't know, be sort of smug and it would be fine. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think, like you say, it would stop your drive, maybe.
Yeah, totally. And you'd just be a dickhead. You wouldn't be a very nice person to be around, I don't think.
Yes, we've all met those people. But you know, when you had the lockdown and we were locked away, so you don't live together just because you're sisters. I don't know why anyone would assume that.
We don't share a bed. We don't live together.
Like Morgan and Wise.
Yeah, we're like the grandparents in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, where we sleep at one end of a bed, and then we just have a rotating cast of people join us in the other end of the bed every night.
I've always found that fascinating that they slept in like the same bed at either end, like top and tail.
Yeah,
and I don't like being near people's feet.
It must have stunk.
No.
Yeah. Especially with all that fucking cabbage soup they eat. That's all they ate. Cabbage soup and four old people in a bed. No.
I mean, that's the ultimate Dutch oven, isn't it? That
hot. That's really hot in places and really cold in other patches in the bed. And you can never figure out why.
Strangely cold. Cold, we're not sure if it's cold or wet.
Yeah,
because old people leak. That'd be horrible.
Yeah.
They flake and they leak.
Well, that's your future, yeah.
Yeah.
Can't wait for that tour.
In a big old bed. Get wheeled around the country in a bed.
That'd be amazing.
Go down the M25.
Yeah.
Flapping about.
Like Supergrass in that.
Yeah.
But you still enjoy working together, and you managed to, like you say, you managed to work it out. When we were in lockdown, you still managed to work out working together and doing stuff.
Yeah. Well, we couldn't do that much music. Like we didn't have to write a lot of new material to go out and gig. So we didn't have to be in a room together to learn the music.
Yeah.
We were doing a lot of writing and just like little passion projects that we always put off from doing, that we were like, now's the chance to do them. If we don't do them now, we'll never do them. So a lot of it was just like writing and stuff like that, which it was like just for our own brains, it was a nice break to just not have to be in a room writing a song before you go to the Bill Murray in half an hour to try it out in front of people. Like having that pressure taken off you was nice. So it was good to be in separate locations.
Yeah, that's cool. Good. Where did you guys grow up?
Portsmouth, mate.
Did you?
Portsmouth, Pompey.
Mate, Pompey.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, how was that? I mean, I know of it a bit, but not... I suppose it's like any sort of small town, isn't it?
It's quite a big town, actually.
Is it?
Richard.
City.
Yeah, it's a city.
Oh,
thank you. Richard?
Yeah, there it is.
I'm so sorry. Really big.
Yeah, I think it's like one of the most densely populated cities in the country.
Is it?
I think so, yeah.
There's me going, it's like a village.
A little hamlet you live in.
Yeah. What was it like on that lane, that one?
Yeah.
So it's a big place then. I didn't really know that. I don't know much about Portsmouth. I know you've got a rivalry with is it Southampton?
Yeah.
But then, you know.
Yeah, it's a big football town, city, big football city, big naval city as well.
They love their navy.
But it's nice.
The Mary Rose.
Oh yeah.
The Mary Rose and the Warrior.
Oh, of course, yeah, that's it. Yeah, I remember that being taken there on a school trip.
Yeah.
That's it.
Bits of that old wet boat that they just put in a big warehouse and spray down so it doesn't fall to pieces.
Bits of that old wet boat.
It was just like shards of it that they've sort of found and sort of tried to put back together. And they just, yeah, they just keep it in a big room and spray it so it doesn't sort of fall. Anyway.
I know nothing about the Mary Rose.
No.
I know absolutely nothing. I don't think I ever went.
You must
have. I always thought the Mary Rose was that boat right next to the ferry at
port. No, I think that's the...
Is that the Trafalgar? Is it Trafalgar?
I've no idea.
Either the Victory or the Warrior.
God, we're shit at this, aren't we? Shit
the one with the orange bits on it. I always thought that was the Mary Rose.
The orange bits. Oh, God.
I always thought that ferry that went from Portsmouth to Isle of Wight, I always thought that was the Mary Rose.
No, it's busy, isn't it, still?
Yeah. A little hovercraft. That's the Warrior.
I remember that when I was a kid, the hovercrafts. Yeah. Bloody hell. That's going back. So what was it like? Go on, sorry. Go on.
No. I was literally going to say the most boring thing, which is that I've never been on a hovercraft. Done. Move on.
No, I never went on one. I just remember them for some reason. I just remember them being around and then suddenly they weren't. Just hanging around. That's why them hovercrafts I've heard all about, snooping around.
See you on about. M25?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. In a bed behind it. Oh, here we go. Here we are. Producer Paul's just put a thing up on the screen. Portsmouth Spinnaker Tower.
Yes.
And Spinnaker Lipstick Tower at Sunrise. Lipstick Tower?
Oh. What's that?
Yeah, see? What is? Oh, here we go. He's putting up the pictures now. There's a spinnaker. I know that. Yeah.
I remember when they put it up and everyone was like, it's going to be this really big tower like the Eiffel Tower. And it went up and I was like... I could throw a rock and it would hit the top of that tower. It's not that great. I would. No offence, Portsmouth, but I've seen bigger towers.
All right, mate. You're all busy.
Wow.
But that's it. So what was it like? I mean, you say it was a big naval town, a big city, sorry. And what was it like growing up in a place like that?
I really liked it. It was like, I think you don't realise until you like leave it.
Yeah.
That it's actually like, I mean, you don't appreciate anything as a kid, whatever it is. So
no.
We didn't sort of pay much. As a kid, I wouldn't have paid too much attention to being in Portsmouth.
Yeah.
But like now it's, we don't get to go home like loads or whatever, but we always like, we miss like seeing the sea and being able to walk along like Southsea Beach and stuff. And all of our, like most of our mum's family lived down there. So that's like a big thing when we were kids was like, there was always someone around the corner to like, we were always at families for like other members of our family for like dinner or seeing cousins and stuff at the weekend, which was like really, really nice. And like, we're really close with our sort of that kind of side of our family and stuff.
Yeah.
Sorry, I feel like I'm babbling.
But not at all.
Yeah. The kind of big takeaway of Portsmouth was like, getting the bus down and going to your nan's house and delving into the biscuit tin and then getting the bus back again and stuff. Like
Nan's always had the best biscuits.
Always had the biscuit tin.
They always just tasted... She always got the cheapest biscuits as well, but they always tasted the best.
Yeah. Dirty custard cream.
That's the thing. The Nan's custard creams always taste better.
Something about them. She used to cook us sausage and pasta. And she'd always buy the, like the 9p economy Sainsbury's sausages.
Yeah.
And... You could have given me a £10 luxury pack of sausages and I'd always take Nan's sausages over that.
It's because she had a bowl of dripping in the fridge, so she cooked them in dripping.
Yeah.
So they're absolutely filthy, but they tasted incredible.
They're the best. And all the like sausage juice would just like drip over the pack. We'd have plain pasta and it would just like drip nicely over.
Wow.
Oh, it was delicious.
I'm dribbling now just thinking about it.
So Eric, such an exotic life in Portsmouth.
Well, I remember, it's very similar to, I mean, I suppose all these places are, where I grew up, I remember going to my nan's and I we used to go there for Sunday roast and I'd say, like, oh, can we have flat meat? Which I didn't know it was beef. And even to this day, my mum still says, do you want some flat meat? I went, all right.
Oh, I love that.
Well, would you ever have, like, pork? Was that flat meat to you as well? Was it just beef?
We just had beef all the time. It was beef or chicken. But we never really had pork when I was growing up.
I don't think we did either. Beef or chicken.
Yeah, I didn't have mayonnaise until I was 22. So
probably the same, actually maybe like 18.
Yeah, it was like a later on thing. We had salad cream up until then.
I fucking love salad cream. It's like genuinely one of my favourite condiments.
Really?
Ham and salad cream sandwich is like one of my favourite things in the world.
Yeah, now you're talking.
I love it.
Do you like a hot chip and a salad cream? It's like a cheesy hot chip and a salad cream is nice.
Oh, I've never
like
had
a
that.
Sour with a salty.
See, things like that. This is because this, like I say, this is sort of a like mental health is the jumping off point for this podcast, but it goes sort of everywhere. And I think like sometimes people say like, you didn't talk about mental health once. You go, listen to what we're talking about. Listen to the fact that we're going, yeah, you dip a cheesy chip in a bit of salad cream. That sorts your noggin out for a little while, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It does. Makes you feel good.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Through, you know, go on. No, go on.
Again, this is another very boring thing to interrupt you with. When we're like having a bad time, we'll go to the shop and get French bread, ham, butter, chipsticks, and have a crispy sandwich.
That sounds amazing.
It's like the lunch that we always eat when we're like, oh, I need to feel good today.
Yeah.
Let's get a crisp sandwich down the hole.
I'll text and be like, do you want me to pick anything up for lunch? And if it's a day where we're like really in it and it's going well, it's like, yeah, pick up like some soup and a roll or something. And if we're like, it's going to be a long day, it's going to be stressful, it's like, get a baguette and some chipsticks and let's go.
Oh, amazing.
Like, that's what today is.
So is that your signal to each other? Like, yeah. Here we go.
Nicola, get the chipsticks in the bag.
Oh, no, it's going to be one of those days.
I had like four tubs of soup and I'm like, okay, they're going. We're doing a chipstick day. That's what it is.
I tell you what, I do. There is comfort from soup. I remember back in the summer, I was with I was at the dining table and my flatmate was on the sofa. And it was a really hot day, and he goes, what are you eating? I mean, I've got a bowl of soup and a cheese sandwich. And he goes, you're mental. I said, it just gives me comfort. I love fine dining and lovely food, but sometimes I just want a soup and a sandwich.
Yeah, it's the best,
isn't it?
You can't really fuck up soup and a sandwich either.
No.
It's quite different. Actually, you know what? I made soup once and it was truly it was supposed to be like an Indian wedding soup and it had like all of these spices. And like, it was when we were living in Toronto and I spent like, I don't like cooking for this exact reason, but I spent the whole day like measuring it, doing everything that the recipe said. And when I ate it, it had pearl barley in it. And I don't know what the fuck I did to it, but it was just like, it tasted like porridge and you could not taste a spice in it. It was the filthiest thing I've ever... It was fucking gross.
And
Rosie came home and was like, I was like, try this. And she was like, I think I can fix it. And she poured in a bag of cloves.
Oh, my God.
So not only was it... It tasted disgusting anyway. Then it tasted of cloves. And then in every mouthful, you got like three cloves.
What it needed was like maybe one or two cloves to just like sit in there and just like simmer for like a couple more hours. I probably
handful.
Put in like... 10 to 13 cloves, I think.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, and it like coated your mouth.
It was fucking rank.
It went in down the toilet.
Even the toilet went.
Sat in the fridge for a couple of days as we were both like, get it in the toilet right now. I don't want to look at it anymore. So yeah, I retract my statement of you can't mess up soup. I messed up soup and it really upset me. And well,
I think making your own soup can be tricky. And if you put a ton of cloves in, I mean, that's handy if you've got toothache, maybe.
Yeah.
That sorted you out. But I remember when I was a commie chef at the Independent. And for only a few months. And I remember, and what we used to do was take the leftovers and that would go into the soup for the next day. And so I remember there was one day they had red cabbage and nobody told me, don't put the red cabbage in. And I just carried on what I normally do, just getting all the leftovers and whacking it in the blender and making all this soup. And then and it just came out grey. It was like prison slop. And you're like the big wigs from the Independent are coming down. They're like, yeah, they're not getting that.
Oh.
So, yeah, well
done. Did you keep the job?
I left in the end. I just stopped going. Just went, oh, this isn't for me. I'm making grey soup. This is not for me.
Were you like trained in like chefery before you went there, or was it a place where you learned everything on the job?
Just learnt on the job. I'd done a bit when I was at school. I did my placement, my work experience at BP in their kitchen. So I was going to be a chef. And then someone said, oh, yeah, but it's unsociable hours. So I became a comedian instead because that's sociable. Isn't it? Yeah. So.
Wait, BP as in the petrol company?
Yeah. They got their head offices were in Moorgate.
Oh, right. And did you get to like cook stuff from scratch, or did you have to cook, like, did you get to be like, oh, today I want to make lasagna, or did you have to follow, like?
Oh, each day they had a, there was a menu that you had to follow.
Yeah.
I made sandwiches for Janet Street Porter. There you go. 'Cause she worked there, so that was fun.
Janet yeah. Street Porter worked at BP.
No, that's just later on at the Independent when she was.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. So yeah, BP. That's a scoop for you.
Oil magnate, Janet Street Porter.
Yeah, that's it now. Oh God, if someone listens to this, it's going to go everywhere. Oh God. You mentioned being in Toronto. How did you? What took you to Toronto?
They had a there's a comedy school called The Second City, right. Which is where like Bill Murray and Tina Fey and people like that all kind of started. Okay. And they had one in Chicago, and then they had another one in Toronto. The Toronto one had like Gilda Radner and Martin Short.
Wow.
People kind of started there. And I just got really into comedy when I was at uni, and I didn't really like my degree very much, and all these sort of comedians that I liked all happened to go to this school, and I was like, oh, I'll just go there. Because I like had never done any comedy, but you could kind of learn like improv and stand up and sketch and all this kind of stuff. And I didn't really know what I wanted to do after uni. So I was like, well, I'll go there and I'll do that. And at best, or at worst, it will be like a fun, like kind of, I hate the word gap year because it makes me sound like I'm going around Southeast Asia, but like, it'll be like a fun thing to do after uni. So I did 3 months in Chicago, and then my visa ran out, and then I went to Toronto because you could get like a 2-year working holiday visa if you were like under 30 or something.
Yeah, right.
And so yeah, I was just like, I'll just go there and try it, and yeah, if it's fun then great, and if not, it was something interesting to do before I get into the world of work. So yeah, that was it.
It's brilliant. I mean, what a place to go. Like you say, the people that have been there, like that comedy greats.
Yeah.
And it's something that kind of other people do. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So to have actually been to have gone there yourself, you must be what we're going, oh yeah, this is what we're doing. This is amazing.
anyone can do it. Anyone can go and take the course, like you don't have to audition or anything. Which is kind of like, I think that's what attracted Nicola to it probably, and what attracted me, is that you just got to try stuff out and you didn't have to be in front of an audience. You could just like sit in a class and be like, am I good at improv having to do it in front of an audience? So we're like quite shy really, so I couldn't imagine going out and doing stand-up for the first time in front of an audience and for doing it for the first time. I couldn't imagine that, but if you do it in a class, then you've got like the safety of like, but the only people who see this are the same people as me,
yeah,
and a teacher,
and then when you're ready, you get to like, when you're like, okay, I think I can do it, then you get to go out and put it in front of an audience, which I guess is like the, you said shy, the kind of wimpy way of, not wimpy, that's the wrong word, but
it's
like the like a little bit wimpy of like, you, a lot of people just jump straight in it and that's how you should do it. I was like, I'm going to find out if I'm funny in a very controlled and safe environment in amongst people who are like teachers and business people who are like, I've been sent here because I have to give a presentation and I can't talk to people. It was like really cool to have like, those classes are just like a real mixed bag of people who were there for like, yeah, just all different reasons of like, there were parents who were like, I just want an hour away from my kids where I can like play.
Right, yeah.
And then other people who were like, I want to be on Saturday Night Live. Like it was a real like, spectrum of people there for different reasons, and so yeah, it just makes it like a really safe place to try something and figure out, like I went thinking like I might be good at this, but I don't know, and nothing's told me that I might be. My friends just find me funny and I think I know how to write a joke, but like I got there and I did not know how to write a joke, but I learned how to write a joke, or like I learned a way to write a joke. They give you the foundations and then you can go, I'll take that, I don't want that, that doesn't matter to me. Like it felt, for me, it worked as a way of like dipping your toe in and being like, I wasn't an idiot. I think I'm funny. And now I've got like some tools to send me into the world and kind of try this thing.
Yeah.
Failed at a lot of it, but the musical comedy stuff stuck. So got something from it.
Well, I think that's it, isn't it? It's, you know, if you're already, you know, you're already funny, then, you know, you're going to, yeah, it's good to, for people, like you say, to give you the tools to kind of get it out of you a bit more, like in a way. But you're always going to find your own version of it, I think.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's what stands out with you guys is that, yeah, there's been double acts before. There's been musical comedy before. But I don't know. There's just something different about what you do, which there's a real, I don't know. There's a darkness to some of it.
Yeah.
And it really makes me laugh because it's, you know, Flo and Joan and, you know, but there's, if you really, you know, listening to it, like I say, there's a bit of a, there is a dark side to it, which I love.
Yeah, we were doing a preview yesterday for the show, and we came away at the end and we were like, oh no, we've talked about death 4 or 5 times in the show, not on purpose, like just in different songs someone dies or someone blows their brains out or so, like all these things that were like, you subconsciously you don't realize you're doing it, and then when you're like in front of an audience the fifth time you say something about death, you're like, oh, the audience didn't laugh at that, and the reason why is because we've done this 5 million times already.
Yeah, they go, oh, another song about death. Oh, when it starts, I wonder where this one's going. Yeah,
go some therapy.
Yeah. I mean, that's it. I mean, is that a thing? Do you think about death a lot? Or you just like, I think it's quite subversive when you've got with what you're doing and the way you sound as well. You sound quite upbeat and, you know, like, oh, this we're doing a thing. But like I say, the themes are always pretty dark.
Yeah.
So it's nice to have that, that juxtaposition.
Yeah.
Between the two is quite a nice thing. Is death a theme for you?
I guess it does like rear its head a lot. Even from like thinking about like really early stuff, it was always a thing that we sort of gravitated towards. And I think because it's like, you do sort of see it in mainstream stuff, but like you write the stuff that I don't know, I'm trying to make this make sense and maybe it doesn't, but like we just always have, and I guess it's just a thing that we've always gravitated towards, and also a thing that we really enjoy of writing really upbeat twee sounding songs, and we look quite twee and we look like we kind of sound quite twee, and so then to sing dark songs to people is like, it always felt like a thing that we did well, and the audiences responded well to that. I think
we grew up always like reading Roald Dahl and all of those kind of things, and I think we just sort of grew up with this dark sense of humor, and we always gravitated towards like weirder stuff, like we're like Grimm's tales and like weird fairy tales and things like that. I think a lot
like
of the
Addams Family and shit, like those kind of like weird dark movies were always,
we loved that,
we just always watched them. Yeah,
we watched Beetlejuice probably a bit too early. We watched Sleepy Hollow a little bit too early, I think.
I love that. I want to live in Sleepy Hollow. I'd love that.
We can make that happen for you.
Yeah, let's do it.
So yeah, I think we all just gravitated towards it, and I always just like I think in general like life has got so many dark turns, so it doesn't, if you're gonna write songs about life, then you can't really make everything butterflies and rainbows. I enjoy the mishaps and the darkness of life.
Yeah.
We gravitate towards it quite naturally.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think owing to the nature of what we do, I think people would be sick if they came to a show of ours and it was all sort of like fun, upbeat songs about people walking too fast. Like if there wasn't any darkness to it, I think it would be like a real sickly sweet show. So it allows us to like write really nice, funny, silly stuff, and then also to be like, but also here's a song about murder or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's a bad example, but like it's a fun world for us to play in, I think.
I think it's great. I mean, I'm the same as you. I find that side of things fascinating.
Yeah.
The darker fairy tales when I was growing up, and like Rumpelstiltskin is a creepy story.
Yeah.
And it's only till later on you go, that's creepy as fuck.
Yeah.
But I love all that, and like you say, Sleepy Hollow and Beetlejuice and and I like that. Like you say, you've got your kind of, you know, twee and proper songs like, oh, we're doing a thing, and then it's like, hang on a minute, they've just this is really taking a turn. And I love that, and I think people do love that. You know, people love gallows humour. They love darkness.
Yeah.
You know, they love, you know, and I think, you know, you've really got that. It's a really nice mix that you've conjured up, which is lovely.
That's good.
Yeah,
you have to, it's a very fine line.
Yeah,
yeah, we don't get gratuitous if it gets a bit like it's a bit contrived or a bit. Cause it sounds like it just sounds like that, because like you've just said, it's just naturally where you go. You're not trying to be dark or controversial or anything like that. It just happens.
It's just life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like that. I think it's great.
We write, I think in like we write a lot of story songs, and often, like, in a song, you have to sort of be like, the stakes have to be high. If you're going to make a song about it, it's got to be drama, or something's got to happen. And often the biggest stakes, the biggest drama is that someone dies or something tragic happens to someone. So when we're writing the story songs, we're now having to find ways that don't involve someone dying. How do we raise the stakes in different ways?
Yeah, I don't know what you do. What's the old, I don't know. Dead hovercrafts, maybe. I don't know.
Float away on a hovercraft. I've seen again.
But do you find, like, personally, are you quite upbeat people, really, or do you find there's the darkness creeping now and again? I mean, I don't even know. That's quite a question for this time of the morning.
I think it's a bad question.
No. I'm not, like, a particularly... I think this is going to sound really disgusting and gross, but I think Rosie is typically a lot more positive and I'm a lot more negative, but also we're quite good at, if one of us is, like, leaning too far the other way, the other one balances it out. Only purely from a business point of view of, like, it's not productive for both of us to be like, we're shit, that sucked, this is horrible, no one's ever going to book us again. Like, that's not a way to live. And also, if you're like, this is amazing and there's no problems, like, then you have a shit show. So, like, it's useful to have someone who's like, yeah, it was good, but also here are five problems that we're also with it that we need to fix. Or, we're not always shit. Yes, that was quite bad, but it's definitely not as bad as you thought it was, which it does sound disgusting. It makes it sound like we hold hands and walk down the road together. But, like, it's like a thing that we found is, like, useful and works for us, I would say. I don't know if you'd agree.
Yeah, I think those feelings creep in the most. Actually, no, I don't think those feelings ever go away. I was going to say they creep in the most near the beginning, because then you're probably like, why am I doing this? And you eat shit a lot more at the beginning because you haven't learned how to not eat shit yet. You never lose that feeling. But I always try and remember now, knowing what I know now, I always try and remember when your brain dips it, when you're like 3 a.m. and your brain's gone into that, oh no, we're terrible, everything we do is like naff and all of those horrible things. I always try and, like, remember I had that feeling a month ago, and I also, between now and that month, I also had some good feelings as well. I try and think of it in, like, a logical way of being like, it's a natural thing to think like this and the good things will come. So, like, I'll try and not ignore that feeling of, oh, you're garbage, because if you ignore it again, like, you could become too positive, and that's also quite dangerous.
Oh, God, yeah.
So I just try and keep the balance of it all the time. Just remember the good bits will come, and so will the bad.
So you're able to talk to each other about these things. Yeah, and because sometimes you could be like, oh, I thought this was shit and this is why, and the other one will go, no, it's fine. I didn't see any of that. I don't know what you're on about. You kind of listen to each other, take it on board.
Yeah, or at least if you say it and you don't listen in the moment, you know that it's been said and it will kind of fester somewhere. Because, like, it's very easy to be like, it wasn't shit and it doesn't matter. And you're like, you can tell me what you want right now and I'm going to think what I'm going to think. Like, we definitely have had, even with other people where, especially in, like, writing shows and putting shows together, where we know ourselves really well, and I think we're quite realistic people and are quite self-aware of what we do and how it sort of goes. So when we've had a bad show and we know it's a bad show and someone's like, it was really good and da 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 da, you're like, you can say what you want right now. I know that you're trying to make me feel better. It's not helpful. And I think we can be a little bit like that, where it's like, it wasn't that bad, it's going to be okay. Where it's like, you can say what you want, but my brain is thinking this right now and you're not going to convince me otherwise. But then, like, half an hour, a day, a week down the line, you're like, I know they were being logical and I know that makes sense and they were definitely right. But in the moment, I'm like, I am right. Do not tell me anything else. You're wasting your breath.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think we're, definitely good at trying to pull the other one out. Or, like, if you fuck something up, it's like, oh, I'm really sorry I fucked that. It's like, yeah, it's fine. Well, I fucked this thing up. Or, like, you did mess that up, but we'll do it. We've got another gig tomorrow, so it'll be fine.
Yeah.
It's hard, like, I don't know if you experience it, but the people, like, if you're doing an Edinburgh show or whatever, a new show, the people around you are wanting to be positive. Like, they're your people around you who are trying to make you feel good and want to say nice things, or like friends and family. They're not, if they see you do a bad show, they're not going to say your show was bad. They're going to try and like boost you up, because that's their job, is to make you feel good. But we don't respond very well to that. I need the truth off of you. If my friends came to the show, I need them to tell me how it actually felt in the room. I don't need them to be like, let me buy you a drink, what a great show. I just want them, I'd rather you didn't say anything. If you didn't enjoy the show, don't say anything. Let's just go for a drink and never talk about it again. But when you've got people around you, or like your agency or whatever, their job is to like make you feel good and like keep you going and keep you positive. But sometimes I'm like, just tell me the bloody truth. Just tell me what doesn't work in this show. Don't tell me what does work. Tell me what doesn't work.
Yeah.
And then we'll get better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you find it? Because I've done a double act briefly, or I've been on stage with other people, and it's very, you have to remember the other person's there. Otherwise, because you've both got your own thing. I mean, you're sisters, but you've got your own thing, your own way of doing stuff. Mm. Did you find it easy to kind of work together on stage, or did it take a while to kind of gel?
I think we're sort of like, it sounds silly to say we're getting there now. I think we sort of had stronger kind of, I don't want to use the word persona because it makes it sound fake, and like ultimately we are just being like ever so slightly exaggerated versions of ourselves on a stage, or certainly have been for a long time. Of being like very dry, and Rosie's like a little bit more positive, and I'm very like deadpan, and we always get described as being deadpan, and I think we still are, but definitely over time we've learned, and like we sort of like gun out these songs at a million miles an hour, and sort of I don't think we got to play very much, which part of the thing that we like the most is like, the reason why we work together is because we make each other laugh and we like working with each other. I don't want to speak for you, Rosie, but I think that's the truth.
I've never found anything she's said.
I am miserable. But like, the reason we do it and the reason it works is because we like it. And we haven't allowed ourselves to be able to kind of play in that. And the things that, more than like songs and stuff, people come away from shows often being like, I really like when you just like interact with each other, which we just didn't do for ages, because we didn't know how to be... we didn't know how to be like Flo and Joan, but ourselves, but sisters, but like not our whole selves, because that's not for everyone. And it was like trying to navigate what that is, was like, we just hadn't figured it out. And then I think we're sort of getting closer where we're just like, people like watching us talk to each other like human beings. Yeah. I think people are fucking fascinated by siblings performing together. Like, they're just, no one, everyone's like, I don't get it. Or like, it's weird that you're, because everyone knows what a sibling is, and a lot of people have siblings. And so when you can't imagine yourself performing with your sibling, I think people do find it like weirdly fascinating to watch it. And I think now we're allowing ourselves to be more of that than we have been before. Mm. We'll soon find out if people actually like it or not. But
we hardly ever used to talk in the first shows that we were doing. We
didn't even look at each other.
We were just like, we just sang the songs deadpan out to the front of the audience. And that was kind of like, it became, not on purpose, but it became our shtick to be like those weird sisters who just sing their songs fast down the barrel of the gun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think it's only like in the last couple of years that we felt a little bit like just more relaxed next to each other. But it does. It is actually just really weird to perform with it. Like, you'll know, it's just weird to perform with another person.
Yeah.
And then when they're your sibling as well, and you... And yeah, it took us a really, really long time to work out what we were actually doing on stage. Like,
yeah.
Jury's out whether we still do, but
and if we ever will.
Yeah.
Well, I always found it when I was doing it, because the way I do things, I'm not that scripted. I've got an idea. I've got stuff in my head, like chunks of material that I've written down, but I won't stick to that. I'll go off, and if something happens in the room, I'll go off on one, on a tangent. Whereas the guy I was with was a bit more scripted, and so the two things we couldn't really, when we did gel, it was brilliant, but a lot of the time it was like, I'd do my thing, he'd do his, and we'd have to kind of, we'd sort of stand there while the other one's doing his bit, and then wait for the next bit, and so it takes a while to get, and when it works, suddenly we'd click, and it would go off on one, and I don't want to use the word improv, but it would just kick in, and we'd be saying things we didn't even know we were going to say.
Yeah.
So I recognise what you're saying when you go, like, when you have those moments when you're going off on one and you're being a bit more playful, those are just fantastic, aren't they?
Yeah. they're the fun bits.
Yeah.
And then you can like pick up jokes that you can take throughout the show that you won't have in any other show because it's just for that audience that night. Yeah. Which, yeah, we wouldn't have done that 2 years ago, I don't think.
No.
And it's like, I think you're always worried as well that like, you want your material and like to be bulletproof and you want to look like you know what you're doing. And so I think you're sort of, we were sort of worried to sort of play within that because we didn't want people to think that we were sloppy or like not proper stand-ups or whatever. And so having, but now like the music and the songs and stuff, like they do the work and they show people that like we know what we're doing and we're like skilled at that thing.
Most
of the time, not always. We still don't have a closer for the show that opens in 3 days.
this sold out tour that you're doing.
Half the show's missing, but don't worry about it. Take my tickets. But like we now that like I think people generally speaking trust us when we're doing songs, so they know that even if the bits in between go hog wild and they don't know what we're talking about, we're having a nice time but it's gone crazy, they at least have the security of knowing, okay, well at some point they're going to do another song and they seem to know what they're doing then. So like it's nice again, like it just shows people, or not shows people, it's not a conscious thing, but it allows us to just be like human beings instead of these fucking robots that just power a million words at an audience and then don't look at each other and leave the stage, like, which is now that you say it out loud, it's fucking weird. And if I was watching that, I'd be like, what the fuck is going on? These people have got trauma, definitely.
And I think it's funny you mention that, with the at least the people know that there's going to be, I remember Terry Alderton saying to me once, he just said, you know, in a show you've got stepping stones and you can go anywhere you like in between the stepping stones as long as you get to the next stepping stone. So I suppose the songs would be the stepping stones in the show, I guess.
As long as we providing that we remember them and put them in the right place.
Yeah.
The stepping stones might be in different lakes, but there will be stones.
More like Takeshi's Castle, you don't know.
Those are definitely our stepping stones, where you step on it and you just get plummeted into the sea and smack your head on another stone on the way down.
Yeah. Oh, the songs are through this door. Oh, this door doesn't open.
No, it's a samurai, fuck.
Yeah, shit. But you're still enjoying it. You're still having a good time.
Yeah, enjoying it more than ever. Yeah, definitely.
Excellent. And do you ever? I'm going to say, I'll ask my flatmate, Paul Sweeney, lovely man, beautiful man. He's got a really great relationship with his family. Like, there's a WhatsApp group and everything, which I find weird as fuck. Have you got the same sort of thing?
Just with our mum.
We don't have a family WhatsApp group that's like all of our cousins.
No.
But
they would find that very embarrassing. But I think if we didn't do this, I did wonder how much we would talk. Like, would we have a little WhatsApp group with our mum still, do you think? Or would we just talk separately to our mum and separately to each other?
Probably.
Because now a lot of the news that we have is the same, so our mum can just feed off one of us. Because it should not be the same for the other person. Yeah,
we'll like Zoom or like FaceTime her or whatever sometimes. And if we can't, we usually try and do it together. And if we can't, and like say Rosie Zooms first and then I'm next. She's like, any news? It's like, well, I mean, you spoke to Rosie yesterday and right now her news is my news. So no.
Yeah.
Okay, nice to see you. Bye. Like,
<it's>... how often would you talk to your family? Like,
not very often, and it's only because I'm terrible at it. But what I find, my mum will text me and she go, I haven't heard from you, I don't know what's going on. I went, Mum, I haven't heard from you either. Phones work both ways. There's this weird thing where I have to be the one being in contact. I guess we're just not, we all love each other, of course we do, but we're just not, we're not a close family. I mean, if my mum hears this, she'll be heartbroken. But it's not, we don't ring each other up and shoot the shit. We just don't do it.
When you're how often would you see them? Like, would you, like when you're together, do you get along better? Is it the phones that get in the way?
Every time I go around there, it ends up, one, Death in Paradise is always on the television. And we just, I don't know, they just kind of roll their eyes at me a lot. I don't think they can. They can't understand what I do really. They appreciate it and they're proud of me, but
yeah,
they don't get it.
Yeah,
you know, like I'll tell them about the podcast and you know who we've had on and the numbers and things like that, and they're like, all right, okay. But I mentioned once a couple of years ago that I was going to do barbering just to have a skill, just because I fancy doing it. And Mum was elated. Oh, finally, a proper job. Ah. So I don't know if that's to say. You sound like you've got... My mum and dad are proud of me. Of course, they are encouraging.
Yeah.
And you sound like your mum's very encouraging.
She yeah. is. Yeah, I think it took her a while. I don't think a parent will ever understand when their kids go into entertainment or comedy or anything like that.
No.
They'll never be able to like fully understand it because it's such a weird experience. There's no experience like it, I don't think.
No.
And our mum was always in a sort of like a normal 9-to-5 job for most of our childhood. So it is really hard to describe and explain. And then your kids are like, other people will then have opinions on your kids who are strangers. It's just like a really weird thing to get used to.
Yeah.
So I've got a lot of sympathy for them having to like work out how they feel about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, she is fortunately like really supportive. And I think as long as we're not like eating beans out of a shoe, then she's like, fine, well, you keep doing what you need to do to make you feel good.
Yeah, as long as it gives you comfort.
Yeah, she tries not to prod too much or ask too much. She just sort of like checks in to see if we're all right. Yeah, we're quite fortunate in that math department.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
I remember
cool.
when we did when we got live at the Apollo, and we like, we don't really, they'll come to like the weirdest like previews to like three people, and they're like, we come to see your show in Banbury, and you're like, why are you coming to Banbury to see the show? It's gonna be shit. But so they like pick up these weird gigs, and then when we got live at the Apollo, we were like, oh my god, Mum, we're doing live at the Apollo, do you want to come? And she was like, well, I am teaching piano that day. And you're like, it's live at the Apollo.
Yeah.
But they just don't understand. Unless you watch live at the Apollo, probably, like, it's just, I don't know, they just don't quite.
Yeah. And so like, and then we were like, I think like, we're not like, we don't ask them to come, like they obviously like come and see shows and stuff, but we don't actively say, we never say you should come to this one or you should come to that. So when we got Apollo, we were like, I think you might like to be at this one. I think this might be a cool one for you to come and see. And then they like, it was never like, oh god, I've got to cancel this thing. They're like, oh okay. I think because you also like, you play it down a lot as well, don't you? Because you're like, hopefully there'll be not lots of Apollos, but like you hope that you will be doing lots of just regular shows, like live shows and stuff. So you're not sort of in the, you sort of exhaust all of that energy in the beginning where you need people to be coming to see you. And then the longer you do it, the more you're like, you don't need to come to this one, but like maybe this one's a nice one or whatever. So I think the fact that we said to her, like, I think this might be one that you'd want to come to. She was like, oh, okay, I'll come to that then. And then obviously it was like, oh my god, I can't believe I was going to teach a piano lesson and stuff.
There's
no reason why they should understand it, because I wouldn't be able to tell you anything about what she did at IBM, because like, why would I know? They're really great. And,
oh, that's cool. Was there a moment when you were doing Apollo? Did you have a moment where you went, fucking hell, this is what we're doing? Because it's, having been in that room, it's a huge room. And it's, when you start out, you know, everybody wants to achieve that, you know, that kind of level, or, you know, do those gigs. Did you have a moment where you were like, fucking hell, this is it, this is the one?
I had that moment when I was playing the drum kit for one of the songs in our set, and I was sound checking the kick drum, and the boom like came through the theatre, and I was like, fucking hell, I'm sound checking a drum kit on
amazing.
The live at the Apollo stage.
Yeah.
It just felt mad. I think we got booked for it like pretty last minute, so it just came around really fast. We were like, we've just got to get our shit together. I don't think it was till like a month later, I was like, fucking hell, we did the Apollo.
Yeah,
right.
Because you stress about what you're wearing and all that other stuff. You stress about all your material and doing like your warm-up gigs that you're like, it just sort of goes over your head really fast. But yeah, it was like a pinch me moment for sure.
Yeah.
I think it's fantastic. And seeing you up there and seeing that you've achieved that, and it's just fucking great. And I'm really and I'm really pleased for you. I mean, well done. You. Well, I mean, I'm not patronising you in any way. Oh, well done. No, sorry.
Thank you, Richard.
But you got your tour. You've got your tour coming. That's, what's that? I've got the dates in front of me. Bloomsbury Theatre, 6th, 13th of March and the 17th of June.
And just we added just added one on the 16th one. As well.
There you go, on the 16th of June. Wonderful, wonderful. Oh, also, you also be playing, are you going to Melbourne International Comedy Festival?
Yes.
Going out there, 31st of March, 24th April.
Yeah.
Excellent, excellent. I'm really pleased. And thank you for coming on and having a chat.
Us.
We really appreciate that.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Also, you're on, I've got it all in front of me, producer Paul just put it up.
Read it out.
Hour-long special, streaming in over 200 countries on Amazon Prime. There you go. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you for your time.
Yeah. Thank you. Where can we find you online?
flowandjoin.com. Everything's on there.
Excellent.
All the shit's on there. Wade through it.
Just find it your fucking self.
Google it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, you too.
Thanks, Rich.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.